It's a scene that many of us will have come across, perhaps on holiday, perhaps simply on a trip to the seaside. And certainly for the small group clustered around Jesus and listening intently to his words, the picture that he's describing will be strikingly familiar. He's talking about fishing and nets. Yes, they know about that. Some of them have even made their living from the boats on Lake Galilee. This is a world that they know well. But once again, Jesus is about to take this story in a very unexpected direction. This isn't going to be all about fish taken from the lake. It's going to be about the final destination of people. It's going to be about eternity. It's going to be one more way of confronting us with the ultimate choice that everyone has to make, including you and me here in this room today. We're coming to the end of this series of stories Jesus has been telling about what he calls the kingdom of heaven. In this kingdom, Jesus is the king. And the kingdom consists of everyone, everywhere, who accept and honour him as their king and lord. And in the series of parables which make up Matthew chapter 13, we've been learning all kinds of interesting things about this kingdom. And in fact, this chapter is not just a random collection of stories, as it might seem at first glance. If you glance through it, you'll see that there's a pattern here, which I put up on the screen, hopefully. If we count the little saying about the teacher of the law in verse 52 as a parable, which it is, that's very short, then there are 8 parables in all in this chapter. And the first and the last of them are both about receiving the kingdom, hearing the news and becoming part of this new world, the kingdom. Then numbers 2 and 7, the weeds and the net, are about the climax and the conclusion of the kingdom. How the age we're living in now will come to its ends. So there's a close connection between today's parable of the net and the parable of the weeds, which we looked at with Johnny a month ago. And then within that, there are 2 more pairs of parables, 3 and 4, the mustard seed and the yeast. They're about how the kingdom grows and spreads. And 5 and 6, the treasure and the pearl, are about the incredible value and with that the cost of this heavenly kingdom of Jesus. So all these parables are describing different aspects of the kingdom. They all fit together. They all comment on each other. And when Jesus says here, the kingdom is like a net, he doesn't exactly mean kingdom equals net. What he means more is there is something about my kingdom that is kind of like fishing with a net. That's how these parables work. So let's look at the story and see what Jesus says from verse 47. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake and caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on the shore. Then they sat down and collected the good fish in baskets, but threw the bad away. And the word that's used here tells us that this kind of net is a drag net. The top of it is floated on the surface of the lake, and it hangs down from the water surface down to the bottom of the lake. The ends would be held by 2 boats, and they would sweep it through the water so that it catches and sweeps up everything in its path. Whatever is there ends up in this net. All kinds of fish. Picture the scene. The catch is completed. The net is filled with flapping, wet fish. The fishermen sitting on the rocks on the shoreline, sorting through them, flicking some into baskets and rejecting the ones they can't use. Presumably, in the original picture, those would be the unclean fish they're not permitted to eat under the law of Moses. But that's not the point of the parable. The point is this great sorting, this great division. Jesus now goes on to give that point. Verse 49, this is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the blazing furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This familiar fishing scene, Jesus says, represents what will happen at the end of this age. It's not that every detail in the story corresponds to the reality of that climactic event. The parables don't work that way. All the focus is on the great separation, the final division that will take place. and what happens afterwards, especially the deadly fate of the people Jesus calls the wicked. And we'll return to that in a minute. But now Jesus is coming to the end of this long sequence of eight parables, and he turns to his disciples who have been listening so closely, and he asks this question, verse 51, "Have you understood all these things?" Jesus asked. "Yes," they replied. Now, if we read on a little bit further in Matthew's account, we will find out that is not quite true. They don't understand quite as much as they think. But they've got the main point. Unlike the crowds outside the house who haven't even heard the last few parables, they have begun to grasp what this kingdom of Jesus is all about. Anyway, Jesus accepts their answer at face value, and he follows up with this final mini parable, verse 52. He said to them, "Therefore, every teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old." Bit of a surprise, really. These teachers of the law, remember, are religious professionals who specialize in minute and detailed knowledge of the law of Moses. They've picked up the job of instructing the people in what they should and shouldn't do. And we last met them in chapter 12, where they were giving Jesus a very hard time, as they nearly always do in the gospel stories. They have been his habitual and regular opponents. And here's what Jesus is saying here. These guys who've been on our backs ever since we started out together, who have slandered and attacked us time after time, who have nothing but bad things to say about us. You know what? There is even hope for them. They know the old law so well. If only they would add to that the knowledge of my kingdom, as you people have, they'd be like the owner of a great hoard of treasure, both old and new. And it's significant that Jesus uses the word treasure, because just a few verses earlier, he's described the kingdom itself in just that way. Verse 44, "The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field," this infinitely valuable treasure. Remember Simon speaking on that here a couple of weeks ago. In fact, in Matthew's gospel, this word treasure is always significant. It nearly always refers to heavenly treasure, wealth that lasts forever, that is indestructible. In the Sermon on the Mount, in chapter 6 of Matthew, Jesus urges his disciples to accumulate treasure in heaven instead of on earth. And that's what this kingdom-trained teacher of the law has. By the way, if you're a Christian, notice this. Jesus never dismisses or devalues the older revelation that we call the Old Testament. Never. And neither should we. The point of this little story is that knowing the Old Testament provides the foundation for the revelation that comes with Jesus. If you devalue the Old Testament, you devalue Christ. And we certainly don't want to do that. But what the Jews had to understand, whom Jesus is speaking to, is that they could only make proper sense of the Old Testament if they know Jesus Christ. It's Jesus who turns the Old Testament into treasure as well. Jesus has come to finish that story as he launches the kingdom of heaven. And it's Jesus who is the only way into the eternal kingdom. Which brings us back to the parable of the net, which we'll now look at more closely. As we said up front, it's very similar to the parable of the weeds. And it reinforces the same urgent message warning us of that climax of human history, the deadly and terrifying judgment that is coming. And so I can't do better than to repeat the two points that Johnny used 4 weeks ago when he preached on that parable. So first, and perhaps you remember the two points, the coming judgment is unstoppable. Look again at verse 49. "This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous." Jesus is very straightforward. What he is describing is how it will be. This is not one possible outcome. This is not how the world might end. This is our future. Just as the fishing net is filled and at that point is dragged to shore for the fish to be sorted out, so there will come a time when this age is completed, and at that point God's judgment will fall. The word used for end of the age means more than just the end point in time. It means the conclusion, the completion. When the time is complete, then judgment will come, and with it the final division, those who belong to the kingdom and those who do not. 4 weeks ago, Johnny used the illustration of the countdown to Christmas, which is certainly coming. And now today, there are 28 fewer days to Christmas. But understand this, there are also 28 fewer days to go to judgment. And we don't know when it will be. We don't know when the net will be filled. But we do know that it's unstoppable, because Jesus said so. And not once, which would have been enough, but many times, there will be a reckoning for all the evil in the world. For the terrorists who plant bombs and gun down the innocent. For the men who groom young girls for sexual abuse. For Adolf Hitler and Pol Pot. A reckoning for all of them, and a reckoning for you and me. You see, we like to think about people we know are really evil. We like to think about them because we think they play us all on side. We're sure we're better than them. So yes, we think there might be a reckoning for them. All those really evil people, all those nasty criminals, all those dictators, all those abusers. Yes, there might even be a hell for them. It sounds like quite a good idea, really. But surely we're in a different category. None of this will apply to us, surely. And if we think like that, it's because we don't know how evil we are. We haven't grasped how God sees the state of our hearts. We can persuade ourselves that we're okay, but it doesn't look like that to Him. If we've ever bent the truth, if we've ever stolen money, time, expenses, if we've ever failed someone in a relationship, we are sinners and lawbreakers. We are evil and dead in the sight of God. And He is the only judge. The truth is that every single one of us has a judgment to face where we will have to give account to God, whose standard is absolute perfection. And it's unstoppable. Second, the coming judgment is unimaginable. Verse 50. They will throw them into the blazing furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This verse is word for word identical to verse 42, at least in the original language, in the parable of the weeds. Jesus is clearly and deliberately underlining His previous message. Why? Because we need the warning. And for most of us, once is not enough to hear it. Jesus is picturing the fires of hell, where those who are rejected at the coming judgment will be thrown. And fire is often used as a description of hell because we can understand what fire does. It burns. It is desperately, tormentingly painful. And it destroys. Hell is a place of endless, bitter regrets, and it's what we all deserve. Hell won't literally be fire as we know it here, fuel combining with oxygen for all eternity. But it won't be anything less. It will be unimaginable. And it is not a swift annihilation. The people in hell will not be instantly snuffed out of existence. That is what they will long for. But it won't happen. Now, this isn't easy to think about. No one in their right mind relishes the idea of hell or takes delight in speaking of it. But it has to be spoken of. Has to be. Does the cancer doctor enjoy giving the bad news to his patient? Of course not. Does it help to keep the news from the patient and the family and to pretend that all is well? Of course not. They have to know. And hell is real and unimaginably terrible. We have to say it. And it's just. The existence of hell is not evil. It's perfect justice from the supreme judge. And whether we are Christians or not, most of us are, but whether we are Christians or not, we need to hear this message again. As we come up to Christmas and all the opportunities Christmas brings to tell people the good news about Jesus, we should all be clear in our minds that behind the good news, there is some bad news to tell as well. In fact, the Christmas message is so good only because the bad news about judgment and hell is so bad, so deadly. That's why the good news is so amazing. So as we look back over the whole of chapter 13, what have we discovered about the kingdom of heaven? We've discovered that we start by receiving it, the word that is sown into our hearts, like seed that has found some good soil where it can germinate and grow and grow strong. Springs up and it grows into a new and powerful life. We've learned that it grows from a tiny beginning into something magnificent and impressive, like a tree from a little seed that is so unpromising at the beginning. That its growth is often invisible, out of sight, like yeast in a lump of dough. And yet in time, the kingdom gets everywhere and touches everything. We've seen that it all takes time to grow. We've heard that the kingdom is incredibly valuable, like a treasure that is worth giving up everything else in the world just so that we can get hold of it. And we've seen that at the end, there will be this great day of harvest, or like a great catch of fish, when the weeds are removed from the wheat and burned, the day when the net is hauled in and the fish are divided up, judgments. And that's when we will clearly see why the kingdom is so precious. Why does this parable follow on from the ones about the treasure and the pearl, which show us the incredible value of the kingdom? Why is it so valuable? Because look what it rescues us from. Because the kingdom people will go to shine like the sun as they live with their gods, while the others will go to the fire. And now the question Jesus asks in verse 51 comes to us. Have you understood all these things? Have you? Have I? If we have, where does it leave us? If you're not a Christian, then this is where it leaves you. What you most need is to find and join the kingdom. It is the best Christmas present you could possibly have. You need to escape from the fire. The good news is that you can. You're here this morning, so you have actually found the kingdom already, because the kingdom is wherever kingdom people are. And they're around you now. Now you need to join it. And that means encountering the King, Jesus Christ, who died so that all the wrong you have done can be forgiven and you can be put right. And you can live a new life with him in charge. A life that will take you through judgment and into eternal life. Have you understood these things? Says Jesus. And if you are a Christian, so you belong to the kingdom, are you living it out? Are you living as a person who belongs in this kingdom? You have in your possession something wonderful, something unimaginably valuable. You belong to Jesus and he belongs to you. Are you like this teacher of the law who is happily bringing out his treasures? Not to gloat over them, not to hold them for himself, but to show his friends and to share with them. Remember last Sunday and what we were thinking about then? All those unreached peoples, nations who have never heard about Jesus. And the psalmist's call, let the nations be glad. Well, the nations can only be glad when they know the Lord Jesus. Are we living as people of the kingdom?